host, Jeff Ragavan, and welcome to the Alchemy Podcast, where we're on a quest to explore the intersection of cannabis, compliance, and creative in the marketing world today and beyond. Welcome back to this week's episode of Alchemy. Joining me today, Kyle Cook, founder and CEO of Loverboy. Kyle, great to have you on the show, man.
Hey, Jeff. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, very excited to have you. And Kyle, you've done some very interesting things in your career. And I think many of us probably know you from being on Bravo's hit reality series, Summer House. You know, for everyone who's tuning in right now, Kyle's obviously the founder of Loverboy, which is a premium alcohol beverage. And it's also a lifestyle brand. And really, you know, they are coming up with all sorts of new standards and, you know, fun ways to have a good time while drinking. So, you know, Kyle, I think many people probably also know the beverage as far as the hard teas and spritzes. And you guys obviously are, you know, one of the fastest growing brands, you know, since its inception. And you launched this with your wife, Amanda, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, it's funny. I've worked in a variety of industries, but primarily doing startups for myself since moving to the city in 07. And so when I signed up to do the reality show, I was like, well, I can't get fired because I'm my own boss.
Right.
But yeah, we conceptualized it together. And also, you know, we're joined by one of my best friends who's also on the show, Carl Radke.
Awesome.
So it's been kind of a wild ride, basically kind of telling the founding story and kind of like the making of the brand, if you will,
right,
on a national television show. And it we've kind of done it in a way that, quite frankly, I don't think anyone's gone and done it before, just from an integration standpoint. I mean,
talk to us about how did the idea come about?
Yeah. So, you know, look, I've ever since business school, I've been very focused on, like, you know, health, wellness, and nutrition. And ironically, was working on a nutrition coaching app when I signed, you know, my agreement to do the show in 2016. But, you know, no one wanted to know about my nutrition coaching app. Everyone wanted to know what we were drinking on the weekends in the Hamptons.
Right.
And back then it was a colossal amount of rosé, but we also were drinking twisted tea because I'm from New Hampshire and I introduced it to everybody in the house.
Yeah.
And we wake up with these gnarly hangovers. So to offset the hangovers from sugar, we started ordering a brand none of us had heard of called Truly. And literally just because it was easy, it was, you know, we could add it to our fresh direct order. Anyway, long story short, I was getting approached by all these various alcohol brands to do, you know, paid partnerships on Instagram. You know, no one's as interested in my nutrition startup. And meanwhile, you know, we try to live these like healthy lifestyles. But then on the weekend, it's like you fly off the rails. You know, you don't know how many calories is in your margarita. You don't know how many calories is in, you know, your twisted tea. So I just looked at the landscape back then and there was not even 10 hard seltzers. And I was like, why hasn't anyone made a hard tea meets a hard seltzer? Why are the only hard teas absolutely horrible for you?
Mm-hmm.
And so that really was the light bulb. I was just like, the hard seltzers are crushing it even back then because they're light and refreshing. They certainly weren't cool yet. They hadn't become a meme.
Mm-hmm.
But they were kind of boring. The brands were boring and the liquid was boring. Meanwhile, you go to these full body, full flavor, full sugar, they call them FMBs, flavored malt beverages. And like, yeah, the flavor comes at a cost. So how do you bridge the gap? And that's really, you know, Loverboy is a premium kind of progressive adult beverage company. You know, our focus is our sparkling hard teas, but we also have, you know, some better for you ready to drink cocktails.
Awesome. Well, yeah, I mean, it kind of, you know, when I think about the last few years, kind of pre-COVID and then, you know, even during COVID, like the hard seltzers just, you know, exploded. And now when you see a hard seltzer hitting the market, you're like, oh my God, another hard seltzer. Like, come on.
When SNL does a skit about it.
You know, that's when you know it's kind of like, all right, too much, guys. But I do, I think when I look at what you guys are doing now, like hard teas are definitely on track to now, you know, outpace hard seltzers going into next year. So I think you're obviously, you know, on the right track. You know, one thing that I was definitely very intrigued in asking you, because, you know, on Alchemy, we have so many guests that come on that are really focused, you know, in the CBD space and the THC space, and tons of companies are launching cannabis beverages, right? And you've probably seen stuff out there with Can out of California and Pabst Labs and St. Peter's Spirits. And it's like, everyone's jumping on, you know, right before the show, you and I were, you know, talking about some friends that we have in common. And, you know, with what's happening in the space, you see a lot of, you know, folks that are kind of, you know, might be experimenting from, you know, traditional alcohol beverages and kind of replacing them with cannabis infused beverages. So just curious with your mindset, you know, one, is that something that you guys are also thinking about in the future? And also, you know, how are you maintaining that, you know, competition in light of, you know, this growing cannabis surge?
Yeah, no, great questions. So, I mean, our roots are in very much, you know, the better for you space. Mm-hmm. You know, our teas are zero sugar, 90 calories, you know, pretty much edges out almost every mainstream hard seltzer. We use better quality ingredients. And I really think that it speaks to a lot of the trends that, quite frankly, alcohol was so far behind in, right? Like for many, many years, you couldn't even find a nutrition label other than like Mick Ultra calling out it's 96 calories and 2.5 or 2.4 grams of carbs. Mm-hmm. I mean, alcohol was this huge mystery. There was no transparency. So when I think about all this interest in CBD and particularly THC, I'd be more interested in the latter, because I'm all about ROI as a consumer.
Right.
CBD, I know there's tons of benefits, but it's hard for me to decipher in the moment. And so when I look at like THC infused beverages and gummies and edibles, you know, there's an easy way if you kind of microdose to kind of partake, if you will, but not do it with any of the negative side effects of alcohol, which are calories, you know, carbs and then hangovers.
Hangovers, yeah.
Right before the pandemic, I was in Long Beach, just looking at a facility, just trying to plan ahead. You know, we have so much opportunity in alcohol, but you know, once things get regulated, and at a federal level, it's no longer, you know, the wild, wild west, you know, I could see us very interested. Until then, I mean, there's going to be companies like Can that are focused on it, but I mean, they've raised so much money. Now they're doing non-alc beverages. And if I were to guess, it's because they got to find a way to put that money to work.
Right.
Right. So I think there's a lot of interest, but there's still tons of hurdles and red tape.
Totally. Well, let's talk a little bit about, you know, your retail, you know, presence. So, you know, I think from a brand perspective, you guys are almost doubling by, I think I read in spring, by March of 2022. And you've got all these incredible partnerships with Kroger's and Target and Publix and Whole Foods. So talk to us a little bit about that evolving distribution strategy and how you guys are really kind of looking at that going into next year.
Sure. So it's been a grind, even though it's been just shy of 2 years since we soft launched three markets. We launched Massachusetts and New York with small craft distributors on a month-to-month basis. And then we launched Wisconsin with an AB house to just kind of see if our brand could pull, you know, when it's not in some big, you know, elite coastal city.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
COVID hit, but that didn't really affect us because people already knew about the brand due to the show. And in most of our markets, particularly in the East Coast, they're very independent driven. So they're, you know, alcohol has all sorts of regulation, just like cannabis, and it's down to the state level. So, you know, in states like Massachusetts and New Jersey, for example, you can't have retail chains like grocery stores and convenience stores having more than, say, six alcohol licenses. So what that means is, you know, they're basically trying to keep the small mom and pop independent stores in business. In the rest of the country outside of the Northeast, you know, chains do the dominant amount of volume in beer. And I say beer because, look, there's wine, spirits, and beer. Those were the traditional categories, but this better for you category that's emerged and this RTD category that's emerged, in theory, you could kind of go a variety of ways from a distribution standpoint. We decided to stick to the plan of partnering with beer wholesalers and building out basically a patchwork of distribution. Excuse the New York City horns.
That's right. There you go. There's your New York City horns. It was bound to happen.
Exactly. So, you know, look, if you've got a wine or a spirit, you can turn on 46 states with Southern Glazers. It's amazing. Like, there's been massive consolidation in wine and spirits. There's other players. Obviously, there's RNDC, there's Breakthrough, but like Southern Glazers just crushes it. And if you've got a great brand and the capital to build it, you can go far and go wide and go fast.
Yeah.
In beer, I mean, they focus on every possible account that could sell a canned beverage. You know, Southern Glazers doesn't really stop at many of the convenience store chains, which sells a third of the alcohol in this country. Beer wholesalers do. Beer wholesalers, since the Prohibition era, are kind of divided on the county basis instead of the state. So there's still thousands of independent beer wholesalers. So to build a network, you need hundreds upon hundreds of agreements. And, you know, take a state like Kansas. I mean, there's 12 different independent Anheuser-Busch distributors that cover the entire state. So it takes a ton of time and effort. We weren't really able to build up our chain relationships until we were in enough states to kind of gain their interest. So as we expanded outside of the Northeast, launched cities like Chicago, we launched with some chains and had a ton of success. Up until basically next year, the vast majority of our revenue comes from independent accounts. That is the opposite of almost every beverage company at our stage. It's usually 70-80% chain. But we partner with great distributors that sell into these independent accounts on our behalf. We don't have any sales reps. So I'm giving you a long-winded answer, but that's just because alcohol distribution is incredibly complicated, and the average consumer doesn't understand, you know, why can't I buy beer and vodka online, but I can buy wine, right?
Right. So let's talk a little bit about you, Kyle, and you know, and your wife. And I know you guys recently got married, like I think a month ago.
Yeah, right? Just like a month and a week.
That's awesome. And so, did you guys meet on the show?
No, we had met the summer prior through a mutual friend at a birthday, and yeah, we were dating, you know, kind of leading up until the first summer we filmed, which was 2016. And you know, being a classic New York D-bag, I was a little too chicken to commit. So I went into the first season of the show, you know, technically single, but that quickly changed once Amanda and I bumped into each other on the Hamptons, and then the rest is history because it was all pretty much caught on camera.
Tell me about the show. Like, what was it like? Did you have a good time? Was it stressful? Did they, you know, kind of edit it in a way that you didn't think would be edited? Like, what was the experience like?
I think the craziest takeaway from you know, being you know, in front of the camera in reality television is that, at least on Bravo, it's incredibly natural, organic, and it's not scripted. So okay. I'm sure other shows where there's gamified elements like The Bachelor or, you know, MTV, whatever, there probably presents a lot of opportunity for it to feel produced. But our show is, I mean, it's just us doing our thing. And it started with, you know, a group of my friends. You know, we were already doing this. We were pooling our money together. We were renting a house in the Hamptons. Mm-hmm. And then after introducing probably 100 different people, you know, we kind of settled on the original cast for 2016. And it's, I mean, look, it's, I've given up the last 6 summers to filming, basically. But I knew in the back of my mind that there's no better audience than the Bravo audience. I mean, it's, there's like a cult like following. And as you peel the layers of the onion back, you realize it's actually one of the most affluent, educated audiences on television. And it's obviously, well, not obvious, but for it's kind of intuitive. It naturally appeals and skews towards women. And women, as we all know, control a good majority of the disposable income in this country. And if you look at alcohol, it's an industry run by men, but women make 70% of the purchases at retail. So there's a huge disconnect. And the show has allowed me to kind of capitalize on that.
That's awesome. And so, you know, I feel like because you've been on the show and you really understand, you know, the value of influence, I did notice when we first, you know, started the episode, you were really talking about influencer. And so I'm really would love to hear from you as far as I'm sure that you guys have, you know, a unique influencer strategy with the product, right?
Well, to some extent, and I hope this doesn't come off as cocky, but we, you know, myself, Amanda and Carl, we are influencers, right? Like
that's what I mean. Like you guys were on the show, so you have likeness, you know?
So right. So we were in a position of influence, right? You know, and the reason I think it's resonated so well is we are one of the very few brands with public figures where us, the quote unquote influencers, are the ones actually building the brand.
Right.
We are three of my eight full-time employees. So this is not like someone approached us and is actually running the company behind the scenes, like 99% of celebrity endorsed brands. I just learned about one of them today where I'm like, oh, I thought it was her brand. Nope. You know, so I think, look, every brand feels like they need to have an influencer strategy, but it's very easy because I've seen it. I've had brands pay me to post, and a lot of times the ROI is just not there. You know, we have a fairly high engagement because I think people on reality television are relatable. Mm-hmm. So we naturally have a higher engagement than, you know, a music artist or a model or, you know, an actor. Because people feel like they know us. When you watch someone in a movie or when you watch someone perform, you don't necessarily know them. You're watching them put on a show.
You see them in real life and you're like, oh wait, I know this person. How do I know this person? Oh wait, I don't know them, but I've seen them on TV before, you know?
Exactly. When someone meets me, they forget to introduce themselves because they feel like they know me.
Right.
Right. And so it's an incredible platform because of that relatability factor that allows us to bring authenticity to Loverboy in a way that almost no other brand can do. You know, cause it's one thing to have someone, you know, on the cap table, you know, the talking head of the brand. But people can see through that in a heartbeat, particularly this day of age, right? Like this is, at this point, we've seen influencer marketing for years and years and years, and we can spot a paid post from a mile away.
Of course. Yeah, I spent a few years doing that and running a content business, so I know that all too well.
Yeah, I saw. I mean, we're talking about Buddy Media, right?
Well, after Buddy Media.
Right. Yeah.
But Buddy Media, we took brands to Facebook, and that was kind of the early days, right, before influencer marketing really kind of, you know, took off. And now it's kind of like, geez, now it's just – everybody tries to be an influencer, and I think it's just pushed too much. It's like, guys, just be your natural selves. And I tell people this all the time. I'm like, look, I will post about a product if I absolutely fucking love it. I will post about a product if it helps me in my life, you know. But I think forcing people too much to post and paying them, even if they don't like it, it's just like you're defeating the purpose of real influence. Like we are all influential to our friends in our own ways, right?
Right. So I look at it as brand equity, right? Because, I mean, you were involved in the early days. And now I think people in a position of influence have to realize that they have a finite amount of quote unquote, like brand equity. And if you post too much, you dilute it. And that's actually why, like, Amanda and I very, very rarely do a paid post for another brand because we're focused on Loverboy. Like, I have 15, you know, sponsorship opportunities in my inbox. And I just, you know, we're very selective and we turn most of them down just because we don't want to spread ourselves too thin.
Right. Well, Kyle, it's been fun, and I know we're coming towards the end of the show. So I definitely wanted to spend a couple minutes, you know, with you and just do some fun, quick fire questions. That's what we do. We talk a little bit about business in the beginning, and then we just end the show just to get to know you a little better.
Sure.
You ready?
Now I'm ready.
So obviously I live out in the Hamptons and, you know, you spent many summers out here. So, you know, just a couple questions for you. You know, what is maybe your favorite spot in the Hamptons when it comes to maybe eating out?
For dinner, I love Crow's Nest out in Montauk.
So beautiful.
Yeah, it's picturesque. The food's always incredible. If I'm taking in the full experience, and it's cliche at this point, but I mean, there's no other venue in the country, in my opinion, than that it's quite like Surf Lodge. I mean, those two have always kind of been my favorite for like the last decade.
Awesome. Favorite beach? Favorite hangout?
You know, the beach by Sloppy Tuna. I forget. I don't even know the name of it. I just call the Sloppy Beach.
The Sloppy Beach by Sloppy Tuna. Yeah.
Of course. Now it's Bounce Beach. But yeah, I mean, it's just so accessible. It's always, you know, it's a ton of fun because you just bump into everybody. But yeah. There's a beach we've been going to a lot, and it begins with a C. Is it
Cockles? Cockles River?
Don't think it's Cockles, but it's
Is it on the South Shore? Is it like Shelter Island? Like what?
Yeah, South Shore. I'd have to look it up. But we've actually filmed there a bunch, and it's like it is a massive beach. I mean, it's incredible.
Cool. And are you? I mean, Cooper's Beach, yeah, in Southampton.
Yeah,
that's gorgeous. Yeah, that's one of the nicest beaches on the south side for the East End. Any fishing or boating? Do you know any water sports?
I mean, I love water skiing. I love wakeboarding. We don't get out a ton. We actually got to do a surf lesson a couple of years ago. It's kind of funny, you know, I kind of give my summer up to filming, and we kind of just, it's not like we can be completely spontaneous because of the size of the crew and film permits and all that stuff. So, you know, to some extent, I don't get out on the water as much as I'd like.
Totally. And so, and as far as the product is concerned, you know, do you have any favorites? I know you've got the white peach, the tea, you've got the lemon iced tea, you've got the hibiscus lime, you've got the chocolate martinis, you got all these great flavors.
Yeah, so we have, you know, our sparkling hard teas. It all started with the lemon iced tea. We wanted to make a premium hard tea. We wanted it to be lightly sparkling, not like fully carbonated like a White Claw, but not flat like a Twisted. And as much as I love the peach because it's fruity and it's refreshing, and the hibiscus is like a nice middle ground, I always come back to the lemon iced tea. But recently we launched an orange chai, basically the first hard chai. And it is incredible. I try to get your hands on that if you can.
Yeah. I know there's actually multiple places around me, Vicky Ruby's down the street, which is like a very small, like mom and pop local store has it. There's a bunch of places out here that have it, which I was pleasantly surprised.
Distribution. Yeah, and we're getting there. It's a grind. And, you know, but then on the cocktail side, on the spritz front, the passion fruit guava kissed with honeysuckle. It sounds as good as it tastes as good as it sounds.
Yeah, it sounds awesome.
If you like passion fruit, I mean, you can't even pick up on the alcohol, and that's 6%. And then we've been
dangerous, Kyle.
Oh, I know. ever since we put the Aperol obsession on the shelf because of the sugar and started drinking the spritz, when we go out to a restaurant, we've been ordering espresso martinis. And so I was just like, you know what? We have to do this cocktail justice in a can. And so that's our full blown, you know, 12% ABV with a little naturally occurring caffeine. I mean, it is an incredible drink to kind of turn it up a notch.
I love it. Awesome, Kyle. Well, listen, it's great to have you on and great to hear about, you know, all of the amazing things that you guys are doing and the distribution strategy. And of course, we'll be looking out down the line for you when you, you know, come down and launch a THC beverage in the future. But thanks for coming on the show. And it was great to hear about all your great plans.
My pleasure, Jeff. Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Kyle.
This episode of the Alchemy Podcast was brought to you by Philo. Thanks for tuning in. And if you enjoyed today's show, don't forget to subscribe and share.